Welcome to this episode of Screen Divers, where myself, Umba, and my co-hosts, Ricky and Steve.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Are going to drag you down with us and take you back to 1999, where a little movie called Mystery Man was released. A movie that we remember fondly until we watched it again. This little movie is very topical at the moment. It's very meta, just because we have movies like Deadpool, and we have The Boys, and we have all of this kind of spoofs and parodies of superheroes. So, without further ado, Ricky, give us your overview. What's the movie about, man?
So, the movie is about a group. It's in the future. It's set in a futuristic time period. Personally, I think it could even be after the Cold War, where the Russians may have won with some of like the lettering that's going around in this city. But it is a city full of crime, very akin to Gotham, especially in the earlier Batman films. But there's a league of superheroes. There's like the top end of superheroes, and then there's like these middle men superheroes. And we're following the middlemen and how they get by day to day, not being one of the popular ones.
Mm-hmm. Was this your first viewing, Enrique?
It's definitely not my first viewing. What I remember of the film is that I saw it once, like in completion, a long time ago, probably around the 2000s period, maybe 2001. And then it was one of those films that was always on TV to an extent that I don't own a copy of this. I had to like scrape and scrounge to find a copy to watch because I was used to it always being on TV. Like you'd be flicking channels. I'd be like, oh, Mystery Men's on. Oh, I'll watch 20 minutes of it or whatever. And I never owned my own copy of it.
Steve, do you remember where you were when you watched this the first time?
I do. I saw it in the cinema in August of 1999. Just before the 2000s, but make me feel slightly older than I feel right now. It's one of those movies which has kind of stayed with me throughout the years, and it's one that I can't say I watch it fondly
anymore.
No, far from it. Yeah. And I always kind of saw it as a bit of a piss take on Schumacher's kind of Batman era.
Yeah, so, you can say that. And we're going to talk about the look of this movie in a moment, so hold on to that thought. Meanwhile, do you think that the reason why we all knew of this movie, we've seen this movie, and we decided to cover this movie probably, is because of the cast?
It's an amazing cast.
It is indeed.
It is absolutely amazing.
So we've got Ben Stiller, Janine Garofalo, William H. Macy, Hank Azaria, that's one third of the Simpsons kids.
Yeah.
Paul Rubens, Wes Studi, Native American actor. Greg Kinnear. Greg Kinnear that was all over the place back in the 90s, in the late 90s. Geoffrey Rush, Lena Olin, Artie Lange. Great comedic presence there for a second as a henchman in the opening of the movie. What a waste.
Not even a henchman, just literally like shouts out, we're the red eyes.
Completely wasted.
And I think he appears later on again. But pretty much.
We got Claire Forlani, which was, you know, like a 90s sweetheart. We got Tom Waits, Eddie Izzard, and I think I mentioned Geoffrey Rush.
Did you mention Kel Mitchell from Kenan and Kel?
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And a good burger, right?
Yeah,
I think. He plays the invisible kid, very visible kid. But yeah, and I think, you know, if you didn't know and you would walk into this movie completely cold, you would think that this was directed by Ben Stiller. There's something about it.
So one of the key things is he was offered the director role for
Yeah. Well, there you go.
But he didn't want to go for it. It was going to be too much. It was too much of a big project for him.
Yeah.
But prior to that, another famous person was offered the director and lead role at the time. But I'm sure somebody else knows about that.
And who was that person?
Ooh. Was it Mr. DeVito?
It was Mr. DeVito.
Who apparently turned it down because he didn't like the soundtrack. Which is possibly the best thing about this movie. It's the thing that even if the movie dated some other soundtrack, which, by the way, you know, with a lead track like All Stars, we're going to talk about that later, you know, Smash Mouth dated as well, but everyone else in this soundtrack kind of stands out. Ricky, who else is in the soundtrack besides Smash Mouth?
Well, you've also, it seemed to be like a very big collaboration of a lot of 90s bands or late 90s bands. So you had people like the Dub Pistols, you had somebody called Citizen King, and you may not know who they are, but the minute you start like going down that deep dive and listening to some of their songs, you wouldn't believe that you know half of their tunes. But not only that, you had the Violent Femmes with No More Heroes, and you had the B-52s, Planet Claire, playing quite a few times throughout it.
I'm actually looking up Citizen King now, man. On my phone.
Okay. Like, I wouldn't listen to it right now, Umber. Save it for later.
I don't even know if we can actually play. Do you think we can play music from...
No.
No.
We can't. We can manetize this in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, if that's what you want to do. I hope this bit's being clipped.
No, this stays in. Everything we're talking about right now stays in.
All right. At least we're honest about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you better not fart, people.
Oh. All right. And if you do, please fart into your microphone.
Yeah. Okay, please. Not only that, we will, one of us will own up to it. How about that? Like, if it happens.
If we fart at the same time, then you'll have to own up for three farts. We fart in unison. We'll store it. Integrated into fart talk immediately. Yeah. That's great.
Well, funny you should say that, because so did the film. The film degraded into fart jokes. Constantly, non-stop, to a point where I felt like that actually South Park somehow has a better way of presenting fart jokes and making them funnier. But, you know, that's the way it is.
Paul Rubens, yeah? That's what we're talking about.
Is that what we're on? Oh, yeah. The spleen. Yeah.
Spleen. Yep.
Jesus Christ. Paul Rubens, we're going to talk about him in a moment, but... you know, we're not going to give him a minute of silence, but yeah, we did lose him last year, and he was a very funny man. Besides what happened to him in the 80s, you know, he does have a back catalog of very iconic characters he's played in the past, including Pee Wee Herman. Obviously, that's what people know him for the most.
And his Playhouse.
Yeah. He's quite funny, actually. That's what I thought. The movie actually picks up the moment he appears.
Okay.
It is fart jokes, but then I don't know. I wasn't expecting, you know, a great comedic depth here or layers. It's what it is. I also didn't expect the movie to be as stupid as I forgot it was. Like, it's a dumb movie.
It feels like the original Batman 1960s show. Kind of feel.
Oh yeah, the campiness. Yeah,
it has got that campiness.
It definitely does,
and it kind of proves that later on with the with all the kind of evil teams which show up.
Oh yeah. There's like six different groups of henchmen here. It's like you're all of a sudden, because obviously, you know. Actually, I think, Steve, it was you that pointed this out, because we rewatched this together, Ricky.
Exactly.
And at one point, there's the typical trope of having, like, the lead bad guy, you know, in comic books as well, particularly in the 60s Batman as well. Everyone had to join forces to take down whoever. Mm. So there's this bit where Geoffrey Rush is standing, who plays Casanova Frankenstein, great name for a supervillain. And he plays him in such a handy way, man. He puts on the worst German accent ever. But anyway, and he goes, he's at the table and he's trying to get everybody's attention. We've got different groups. I can't remember what they were called, but there's Big Tobacco.
I have the list. I have the list.
Go.
You have the very ill fated Susies that were the Japanese Yakuzas.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, not presented well. The suits, the big giant,
they look like New Romantics as well. If you look at them, they all look like members of Adam and the Ant. Huh?
New Romantics, but Yakuzas. They were Yakuzas, and hence called the Susies. Which was
weird.
No. The suits, which were the standard the gangster Italian American ones. Yeah. The furries, which were the women.
Yeah.
The frat boys. Did you catch the cameo of the frat boys?
Who was it?
The guy sitting down.
They look like fucking Flesh Gordon to me, man. Like.
The guy sitting down who suddenly said, "Bring the brewskis," was Michael Boombar Bay.
What the fuck is who's that?
As in the director Michael Bay of Transformers.
Oh my God, yes. It was Michael Bay. Oh my God. What a douchebag. Yeah. Anyway, in every possible way.
The other cameo was the not so goody mob, which were the African American gangsters. And the cameo
we noticed this one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Umba. So who was that one?
Did I say it when we were watching it?
We were saying it. You repeated it three times.
Oh, God. Okay, don't put me in the spot. Who was it?
Oh, come on. It's CeeLo Green.
Oh, it is CeeLo Green.
It's CeeLo Green.
Sparkly. Yeah. I remember that now. Okay, you're right. I actually spotted him, As soon as he came on screen, I was like, Steve! Okay.
So those were the five gangs that were standing around Casanova Frankenstein.
But there is one bit when, just going back to why we brought this up, so thank you for bringing them up, because they were so tropey.
crazy. 60s.
So stereotypical. What's his name? Geoffrey Rush's character, Casanova Frankenstein, standing over the table, and he's addressing them, and at one point he finishes his speech and he goes, "Can you dig it?"
He did a Warriors.
Do you remember? Yeah. And I think it was Steve that pointed out. We both looked at each other like, no. Normally it would have been funny, but it was just gratuitous.
A potpourri itself reference, depending on which way you go.
Absolutely. How about Greg Kinnear in this, man? Greg Kinnear is such a douchebag. And again, it's a caricature of a douchebag.
He was. In the 90s, he was your favorite person you wanted to punch kind of character.
Absolutely.
All the time.
Man, I'll go as far as telling you that he would have played a great Homelander.
Oh, 100%.
He would have made... It's a difficult thing to even talk about because Anthony Starr does a phenomenal job with his character. So. Yeah. You just wouldn't give it to anybody else. But if you would have to have him like being very smarmy all the time, and like it's Greg Kinnear would have been chef's kiss for it. Perfect. Mm. He's a proper douchebag, and he can play a villain. Don't go off this movie thinking about him playing a villain, because when he dies in this, he dies in a very unceremonious manner, and you wouldn't wish him any other death.
Mm. Any 100%. Other
death? Yeah. So the soundtrack, you mentioned a lot of seminal bands in there, including the B-52s. But again, this is the second time we have to pay respects to someone who's died recently, and it's the singer from Smash Mouth, right? I know that Ricky, you're not very fond of Smash Mouth, neither am I, but they were part of the cultural zeitgeist of that particular
time. It's not so much that I'm not a fan of Smash Mouth. Smash Mouth has a place, like when. Walking on the Sun got released. I thought that was, it's a very decent pop track.
Are you admitting this publicly?
Of course I will. Like, I've got a huge list. I allow myself one pop act a year. I've got a huge list of pop bands that I'm allowed.
So are you including 1999's Top Spot? You're placing Smash Mouth in there?
No.
Okay. Wait, too many pop bands.
I'm just
No.
When it comes down to popular acts, you said, like, come on.
Yeah, I know, but like, I'm allowed one, and they weren't my 1999 one. Okay.
Okay.
So, anyway, right, my issue with what Smash Mouth became, they became like a joke sort of tribute band to their own material, to an extent that the lead singer would turn up to concerts and festivals where they were headlining drunk, not knowing his own words, getting the crowd to sing it for him.
Too much money, too fast.
And then when the crowd would turn on him, he would like antagonize them more by doing Nazi propaganda salutes towards the audiences. Yeah, no, and
that's
just
not,
basically,
that's not cool.
He basically went downhill fast. And when this got, when this went viral, it led to the end of Smash Mouth. So
yeah, I mean, they did make an astronomical amount of money. I don't know if you remember the Shrek franchise. Yeah. Their entire music was tied to that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. That's big bucks. Too fast. That's what it is, probably.
But if you're not going to respect your audience, then who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. And as a musician myself, in the loosest possible term, you have to have respect for your audience. That's
absolutely
it. Full stop.
Eddie he's fantastic in this. He's fantastic.
Absolutely fantastic.
He's awesome, as usual.
There's a few shining lights in this movie. Eddie Izzard's one of them. I would say Janine
Garofalo is the other one.
Even William H. Macy. I mean, it's not a standout role, but he's a great actor. That's it.
Yeah. I'm actually disappointed to see that Ben Stiller didn't do better with this. He's meant to be, it's in the center of the poster. If you look at the poster, it's right above Mystery Man. It's this big Ben Stiller face, and then everyone's behind him. But it's, he kind of underplayed it a little. Like, and strangely enough, he plays a character that cannot control his rage, and he underplayed it. It's
what I read, this was a deliberate choice.
By who?
By Stiller. By Ben Stiller himself. Yeah.
Okay.
So the idea was he was going to be furious all the time and exploding, but he reduced his that role to make it more
emphatic.
Emphatic, yeah.
I was also surprised to see Hank Azaria not standing out more in this. Like I said, the man is a tour de force, man. Yeah. He's unbelievable. He can do anything. He's a third of the Simpsons.
Yeah, but he was given a very, very hammy role. The whole Blue Raja thing I remember, as we sat down to watch it recently, Sally and myself, we were so excited to sit down and watch it again because we both had fond memories of it. And as soon as the first four puns came out of Hank Azaria's mouth, I was like,
So here's another bit of trivia. Ben Stiller, the original character, was going to be the Blue Raja. That was what he was requested to play, and he turned it down, saying that he didn't want to be the geeky guy again.
Absolutely.
There is one thing
staining and tainting this movie. And at the same time, it was probably part of the charm. And I think this movie was a response for something that, I really don't want to go back there, but I have to. I will never forget when I walked out of Batman and Robin, how I felt. Yeah. More than Batman Forever. But this is actually, from what I, one of the little bits that I collected while I was looking for information about this movie, and a little bit of trivia down to you guys. You can go to IMDb and there's 200 entries about this movie because there's a lot of little trivia about it. But one of the things, and Steve mentioned, I'm going to steal this from Steve. That's why I took it away from him earlier. Is that a number of the sets from this movie. And if you watch it, if you go back and want to put yourself through what we had to go through.
That?
Yeah, do you want to do that? And we're talking to you listeners. We did it so that you don't have to. If you have a fun memory of this movie, just hold on to that memory. It's much better that way. But the movie in question was Batman Forever. And apparently the budget went over so much in this, just because if you look at star power alone, they had to pay these people. But they had to use sets from Batman Forever. which dates back to 1995. So you had all the stuff sitting in a lot somewhere at what is this? Universal? What is it? Warner Brothers. It's got to be Warner Brothers, right?
No, I think it is Universal because the producers were from Universal. Yeah.
Okay, but a number of the sets were reused, and you can see it. You can see even also the color palette of the movie as well.
It's very much reminiscent. Yeah.
Yeah. Calls back. Yeah. Besides the day sequences, which, by the way, if you think about it, it's very unusual for any superhero movie. Besides this new wave of the last 20 years of Marvel movies, usually everything happened at nighttime. And I think it's a conscious decision, not just because of Batman or Blade or whatever, you know, and crime is fought at night because crime happens at night, but it's also cheaper to shoot at night because it's easier to hide a lot of stuff. Yeah. I remember recently I watched an interview with a both beloved and hated director, Ridley Scott, the man who doesn't know when to quit. He was saying that he shot Blade Runner at night mainly because it was cheaper. Mm-hmm. It was easier to hide stuff, the smoke and the rain, and it was just easy. It's easier. If you think about it, it's much easier to disguise something at nighttime than, you know, to have daylight shining a light over the truth and deception that is cinema. Mm-hmm. Eddie Izzard. Does anyone want to talk about him in this?
I am a huge fan of Eddie Izzard.
So am I.
Just in general. And, you know, like, I find that in this movie, it's that whole feeling of, like, what was on the cutting room floor? Because there's so many of these actors who are very good at improv.
Yeah.
Eddie Izzard's one. Hank Azari is another one. William H. Macy is great. Janine Garofalo, they're all really great at improv. But all the stuff I kept reading about this film was over budget, inexperienced director, especially with a movie this large. And it just became like, basically like who's got the biggest cock on set. It was everybody fighting and stuff. One of the things that Hank Azari said post all of this, because he gave a very telling interview with AV Club, which was about his body of work, but they brought up Mystery Men, and he was like, yeah, like, you know, the director Kinka Usher, he was meant to play daddy to all of these egos, and he couldn't, and because he was a commercial director,
it's also his first movie.
Kinka Usher, and, is that the name?
And also his last movie.
It must have been exhausting to try and handle all these egos on set.
And, you know, one of the quotes from Hank Azari when he asked Kinker about it was, he was like, I'm done with this. I'm ready to go back to commercials. This is too difficult. Another thing about it was supposedly Ben Stiller and Greg Kinnear got into an altercation. Yeah. So who knows whether it was physical or verbal, but it was enough for Ben Stiller to try and remove himself from the contract.
This is what I read as
Ben Stiller said that publicly about Kinnear, actually.
Yeah, I think it was on
David Letterman. Yeah. But which is a bold, bold move from someone very young, because you normally don't do that in Hollywood. You don't, you know. You tend
just
to try away
to rock
from
the boat.
Yeah. You know, no qualms about, which means that they must have had, a huge amount of animosity, probably. Both of them were like leading man material in the 90s. You know, Greg Kinnear was everywhere, man. He was like, wasn't he As Good as It Gets? Or
Yeah.
But it also shows you like what a failure this movie was, because if people like left it and went, yep, so this happened on set, and this was terrible, and we hated this, and oh my God, nothing was being controlled. You know that the movie was doomed to failures from the get-go.
Yeah, so I was just going to say that with Greg Kinnear, he was also in Little Miss Sunshine, and You Got Mail, and he's got serious acting chops as well as comedy chops as well associated to him. But and he was a leading, pretty much... yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy when you look at his overall amount of work.
He's made a lot of money. I think he pivoted to I didn't follow his career that closely. I seen him recently.
He was in
something big where he plays a lawyer as a comedy of some kind.
Jesus. Oh, what was it?
Yeah. Was it a TV series or? You know what I'm talking about?
He was in Blackbird for Apple TV.
And I can remember him being in the mini series. All right,
IMDb, help us out. I'm actually doing that now.
So wait a second. I can remember him being in the mini TV series for The Stand.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think when they did the Twilight Zone TV series, he was in an episode.
Oh yeah,
I think.
He was.
Uh-huh.
I can remember him remembering being like a captain, I think.
Okay, can I tell you what it is that I remember him from? Because it's a little show called Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's the last season.
Oh, right.
Okay. Where he plays the lawyer that is basically persecuting him because he gives a bottle of water to someone in line in Georgia during the elections. Larry.
I haven't got to that season.
No,
yet.
You didn't.
No,
I'm not a fan. Well, you should be, per se.
We need to fix
cool.
this.
That's cool. My wife isn't a fan, so I have to watch it separately. Like, you know, like, ooh, she's going to sleep now. I'll put on Curb. And then I laugh.
You're talking about Sally, right?
And then, like, I laugh, and then I wake her up, and then it's all over.
Okay, man. I saw the Hot Wings Deadpool and Wolverine sketch.
Yeah,
which they did recently. I was just talking about waking your partner up in the middle of bed. I quite literally couldn't stop laughing, and I woke her up.
So when we're looking at Ben Stiller, why do you think Ben Stiller's career went that way, and Adam Sandler's career? I still rate Adam Sandler, and I know it's because when he does drama,
you don't have to justify it. I agree with you fully. I have a huge amount of respect for Sandler, and I'll tell you why in a second.
But yeah, so with Adam Sandler, what's been great about his career is that he started off with, you know, the fart jokes, the immature humor and all of that stuff. But you see Adam Sandler in a drama and you're all
he'll
in.
He'll smash it. Yeah, of course.
He'll smash it.
Yeah. Since Punk Drunk Love, was it
Uncut Gems?
Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
Look, if you can do comedy really well, you can do drama. But let's not take away stuff from Stiller as well. Like there's a couple of things about Stiller. He actually did realize after a few flops, okay, that the comedy bag was empty, and he went on to direct, man. And he ended up in directing like really hardcore drama that, you know, will stand the test of time. Some of it still needs to be discovered by the public properly. One of them is a little series called Severance, which you may have seen. It's mind-blowingly good to the point in which I was watching, I didn't realize, oh my God, is this Stiller? This is Ben Stiller directing. And before that, it was Escape at the Namora. Mm-hmm. I think the show it's called. Have you heard of the show?
You were telling me about it previously.
Escape at the Namora with Benicio del Toro and Paul Dano, one of Ricky's favorites.
One of my favorites.
Have you seen the show? And is it Rosanna Arquette or which is this?
Yes,
which is
it's, the... it's Rosanna Arquette.
Yeah,
yes.
Sorry.
My bad. Rosanna Arquette is the big blue. It's Patricia Arquette.
It's
there we go.
Yeah, and okay. I tend to get confused about the two sisters because both of them huge amount of talent. So that's the thing. One of them was in True Romance. The other one was in After Hours. Both movies are, you know, among my favorite movies of all time. So it's Patricia Arquette. Now I realize as well that she must have a close relationship with Stiller because she is in both shows. She is in Severance and she is in Escape at the Namora. Is it Escape at the Namora or From the Namora? Can someone check?
I think it's Escape at the Namora.
Escape at the Namora, yeah. Phenomenal show based on allegedly true events about two inmates.
Escape at.
Yeah. If it's one of those things that we need to cover in the future, perhaps, but it's very, very dark. It's not. It's not an easy watch. It's really heavy, and it's about a lewd kind of affair between this prison guard, played by Patricia Arquette, phenomenally. She's a chameleon, man. She really is. She doesn't get enough credit these days. The older she gets, the better she gets. And I remember when I was a teenager, I had a complete crush on her because she was in my favorite Nightmare on Elm Street. She was in Dream Warriors.
She was in the third one, yeah.
Yeah, she was in the third one. And but she kept, you know, she kept growing. Her performances kept showcasing how much of a talent she had. And some actors just need to grow, you know, to keep growing. You know,
that could be a whole episode in itself. Like the whole like nepotism and like if you look at like, you know, the Phoenixes, you know, and the Arquettes and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
These are like people who come from like, you know, an LA background or an acting background. And then like you see them in a couple of films and you're like, they're okay. And then you see them in bad films. And then you're like, oh, wait, if only they just waited 10 years, they would have been amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know exactly what I mean. But so this is Stiller as well. About Sandler, you were saying, we were quickly discussing. Some people hate Sandler, and it's very misplaced. They don't understand one thing. Nothing has changed about Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler's been making the same movies, but the thing is that you have changed. You are getting older. Those movies are for children. They're for children and tweens. Then, and you can make a lot of money by keep pandering to those audiences, because those audiences will go to the movies and will perceive entertainment in the same way. So that's the thing. Like for people to go, oh, Sandler's movies are stupid now. It's like, what are you talking about? Look back, and they're pretty much the same movies with the same structure. He plays the same character, and that's fine.
Do you realize there's a little Nicky 2 coming out?
Well, there you go. And there will be a tween out there somewhere that is going to enjoy that kind of humor. But then Sandler as well can go out of his way and go, oh, wait a second, I'm going to show you something. And he can act. You know, with Stiller... The comedic bag ran empty because he tried to develop characters into another era as well. Zoolander worked when it came out, but you can't make the same topical jokes that you can. It just doesn't work. It didn't work. Zoolander 2 doesn't work.
I mean, he also hit his. But this is what I mean. Like Ben Stiller keeps going for. I'm not going to say the easy buck. I'm going to say he keeps going for things like Meet the Parents, and they're successful. Or Night at a Museum, and it's successful. And yes, you're right. It's a certain audience they're working for, and it will always work. But then, like, how many people have seen... there was a really dark film he made, which was a low-budget
Permanent Midnight,
film.
I think
Permanent
it's called.
Permanent Midnight is a good one.
Is it about... it's based on the life of the guy that wrote Alf, I think. It was a heroin.
Yeah.
I think that's the movie you're talking about.
Yeah.
Was it called Permanent Midnight? Is that the one? Because it's really dark.
Yeah.
If that's the one, there's a scene when he's in the car and he's injecting heroin and he's got a kid in the back seat or something. Like, it's really...
I don't think it was that one. I think it was, like, Greenback or something like that. It was about, like, this guy who, like... Basically, it could have been, like, Punch Drunk Love. It's, like, that sort of personality.
You're talking about Stiller or Sandler now?
Talking about Stiller. Okay. Stiller made a film that was very similar to Punch Drunk Love, where the main character meets a girl and has, you know, is on that level of like not really being in society and just like having to deal with his feelings with this girl. And it got nothing. Even with a big name like Stiller, it got like nothing. Like nobody saw that film. And I remember, again, it was probably during the time where I was like getting movies quite illegitimately, let's say. Mm. And I was like, oh, Ben Stiller's in this movie. I'll download it. It might be a good laugh. And it was just like, oh my God, this is quite dark. Oh,
you know, I'm actually looking for the movie you're talking about now. And I'm having a hard time. You know why? Because instead of having an actor as the top of the list of his
accolades. Were you looking at director or producer?
Producer. It's like the top of his accolades on IMDb, the first thing that pops up is producer now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Look, he's made a lot of money. This guy made a ton of money. You want to launder some of that money. Don't you? You want to clean it up a little bit. So he's produced so many things. There's so many things ongoing at the moment that he has. It's in the past 5 years, he's got 20 projects. We're talking millions of dollars here.
Yeah.
It's but anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like he's also like he's got friends, like with Adam Sandler, he's got friends. So he's been.
I'm sure they are friends, probably.
But also, like he's been on the show Friends. He's been on Mr. Show with Bob and David, like Odin Kirk.
What are you talking about? We're still on Friends.
What?
Dan Stiller was on. Yeah.
Yeah, he was on Friends.
Does this mean that you actually like Friends? You're a Friends
fan? I have watched all of Friends, mate. Of course, I've watched.
Listen, you have to justify. Don't justify yourself to me. A lot of people like Friends.
I'm gonna leave.
Okay.
I'm gonna leave.
Listen to me. Goodbye, this guy. I'm saying I like Frasier and I like Seinfeld. Like, so it's okay, you know. But it's good to know that there are some dark secrets about you.
It's not a dark secret. Just now.
It is a super dark
secret.
It's
not a dark secret.
Man, Steve is laughing in the background because he didn't know either. He's terrified. I know that type of laughter. I know the way he's laughing now is fear.
By the way, fear in his voice. The film was called Greenberg, okay? And
Greenberg.
He played the title character, Roger Greenberg.
I don't think I've seen it, but now I'm gonna. How long ago was
good.
It?
It's 2010. It's good.
Okay.
It's not great, but it's good. But it's him doing a dramatic role, which we don't see Ben Stiller do a lot of.
Look, I think Stiller took the same career path as TV is everybody's darling, Zach Braff. Zach Braff, man, was at the top of his game with Scrubs. That guy changed the paradigm. Is that changed the game completely when it comes down to episodic comedy for a generation. Because Scrubs is also, like, the guy also made a lot of money. These are shows that are in syndication to this day.
Man, which means I just started rewatching it again.
It's still good. It's still good. And what's the name of the guy that plays Dr. Cox? He's in Fargo, isn't he?
Yeah.
No, I think that's Peter Stormare. That's Peter Stormare. I confused the two. Peter Stormare. But wait a second, isn't he? Isn't something similar?
I'm gonna have to look it up now. I know he was in Three to Tango, the guy you're talking about.
Well, the guy I'm talking about was also in Stan vs. Evil, which is a phenomenally underrated show. Have you seen it? If you're an Evil Dead fan, you need to watch Stan vs. Evil. It's great.
Are you talking about John McGinley? Is it him?
Yeah, that's Cox. I mean, that entire cast is just phenomenal. Like, it's the chemistry that they had on screen as well. Some of the fast editing in it, scene, walk and talk, there's a lot of that stuff, but they were making fun. The walk and talk was making fun of other procedural shows. If it's in the background, I'll watch it. Apparently, it's in planes everywhere.
Pretty much.
10,000 airlines will have it in their catalog. I don't know why, but it's, I'm not saying it's a great show to fall asleep to. Perhaps it is. I don't know. And there's also something about
a quick, easy laugh.
Yeah.
That's it.
And also, there was a very metrosexual quality about Zach Braff as a leading man in that. And I think that's still current.
I would go as far as he was a very. You could imprint anything you want onto Zach Braff.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm more than happy to keep talking about anything else other than this fucking movie.
Yeah, we are not talking about Mystery Men at all at the moment. Okay.
Let's get back on topic.
Yes, please.
Okay, let's talk about maybe the director himself. I know we broached upon it. We know that it's his only movie. And we can tell straight away that he's come from an advertising background. A lot of the shots in this movie are done as if they're an advert.
There's quirky.
Certain quirky turns.
Yeah.
He won awards. This man won awards for the Taco Bell adverts.
Words.
Not just that. The Got Milk adverts in the States.
Oh, really? Is that him?
Yeah, that's him. So he's won a lot of awards.
What's and Kinker he's directed from, a lot of you think, the name, Heritage? What's Kinker?
Usher.
Are you still avoiding talking about Mystery Men, Umbar?
I am. I just want to fucking... This backfired massively.
What do you think his background is?
We had something else on the schedule, man. I think we had a Raising Arizona. We went for this instead. It's my fault.
I wonder who that was. Yeah.
It's my fault. I just don't need to do it. You know that fart you were going to claim earlier? That's it. That, this is my fart. All right. This episode is my fart.
Okay. In the IMDb trivia section.
It's my fart that you have smelled for 42 minutes.
The only
42
thing.
42 minutes. And I'm talking to you, listeners.
All right. Give it up. Give it up, Bumba.
Okay. So the only trivia that they've got straight away. He's good friends with Michael Bay.
Michael Boomba
which
Bay.
Which we've already broached upon.
That's why he's in the fucking movie.
Yeah, Michael Boomba Bay.
I couldn't believe that you didn't spot him, Steve. I just,
no, I didn't. I'm not. He's a director.
Now
he's
it's now I know exactly. It's the blonde dude. It's
yeah,
the blonde
front,
dude. It's like Bruski's. Yeah, that dude. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. How can you forget?
But one line.
Mr. Explosion himself.
Mm-hmm.
More explosions.
What
but anyway,
does this, hold on. What else does it say about the facts of the director?
That's Ooh. It. That is
that it?
Trivia.
Is
yeah,
that
that's
all
trivia.
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 Jeez.
That's it. That's his trivia.
Oh my God.
Good friends for Michael Bay. That's his only piece of trivia.
All right, oh my God.
I
just read something.
I've got a bit more trivia. He also did the Taco Bell adverts in America with the talking chihuahua who would go,
Can I suggest something? Can I suggest something? Because we all have IMDb open here. Let's just do bits. We'll just do bits about this movie until we run out of time.
Well, actually, I've got a few things that I want to
bring up. No, but wait a second.
Up.
You just gave us one, which we covered up completely, so I don't even know. I didn't hear
you.
So.
I'd already said it earlier as well.
Well, there you go. So it doesn't matter, Ricky. All right. So there's one thing to be pointed out here, and I'm not going to go into the beat that I found that reminded me of it. This movie is ridiculous in many other ways, and it, perhaps a little bit too. It's ridiculous to the point of ridicule. The limo.
Oh.
The limo.
The limo.
The limo.
Did you get this off the IMDb car?
No, but wait a second. Don't steal my bit. I'm about to tell you what it is that I found about that car.
Okay, go ahead.
Actually, no, I can't even read because it's not about the car. Sorry. It is. Okay, so rewind. It's Captain Amazing, which is the character Greg Kinnear plays, Jetpack.
Yep.
And now I have to go back and rewatch this fucking movie so I can because I missed this. Is Jetpack uses the same sound effect as the turbine engine sound from the Batmobile from Batman 1966, the TV show?
Oh my God. It's probably correct.
It is correct. And that's the reason if one of us for sure will go and check.
My God.
For sure. Now, next. I've got other bits. Do your bits. I'm looking through them. There's a lot of interesting stuff in here.
Here's my
we didn't
bit.
Talk about Tom Waits at all, by the way.
Oh, yeah. We should really talk about Tom Waits.
So, yeah.
That's another bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely another bit.
All right.
So,
who wants
Tom?
Right. I'm just going to say he had the inability to memorize his lines. Let's just say that.
You think it was due to alcohol consumption, maybe?
It may have been something to do with alcohol consumption on set.
He's a fucking legend. We're going to let it slide.
But does anybody else want to explain one of the reasons why he moves his hand around?
No, you
so
go
much?
For it. You go for it.
That's your IMDb little fucking trivia, so please.
Oh. So the reason why Tom Waits was moving his hands in weird gestures during some of the scenes is because he had the actual script and his words written on his fingers so you could see them on one side in front of the screen, which is terrifying.
It is. But man, he's all presence. It's like Bill
Murray. Of
course,
You
know what I mean? Like, you don't even have to give a lot of lines to Tom Waits.
Come on, the first scene we see Tom Waits in that movie, he's in an old people's home trying to chat up old ladies.
Yeah. I come for the girls.
He's freaking phenomenal, man. I remember the breakup scene in Down by Law by Jim Jarmusch.
Oh, my God.
Ellen Barkin, that opening scene. How he's sitting there, he's not saying anything, he's just nodding. She's just running around in hysterics, throwing his shit out the window. And at one point, she picks up his shoes. He goes, not the shoes.
Shoes.
It's phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And in Coffee and Cigarettes with Iggy Pop. How they're sitting in the. It's amazing.
It's a beautiful scene.
It's a beautiful sequence. The entire thing. Is that your music on the jukebox? Is it
like coffee and cigarettes? Maybe one episode, coffee and cigarettes, because you could deep dive into like in time periods and
there's
all that
so
stuff.
Much. I mean, but just going back, Alfred Molina and Steve Coogan.
Yeah. But going back to
this movie
and Tom Waits. Do you remember his calling card? Do you remember his
says,
calling card?
Chickens in a. I can remember the chickens bit of the bottom right hand corner.
Well, that's
which
the thing.
Gets called up later on.
Both myself and Sally, when it got to Janine Garofalo and whoever went to go see him, and Janine Garofalo says something along the lines of, "Who would want to rent a chicken?" Yeah. Both Sally and I were like, "I have what is that line?" And then the calling card
as they are
came
walking
out
towards,
again.
Yeah.
And that time we could read it, because the first time you read it, it's like what there and it's gone. But what it says on the calling card is aromatherapy, laser hair removal, carnival rides, chicken rental, weapons designer, innovator, inventor, world changer, old fun house, hella fairgrounds, test site number 7. How hilarious. Are you meant to read all of that in the time it's on the screen?
What is it, like a couple of seconds? Not even.
I just got the chicken bit on the corner. I was just like, what the fuck?
Well, that's when we were watching the movie with Steve. At one point, they are walking into this corridor that will lead into the next sequence, which is where his lab is. And there's a fucking chicken just crossing. And I went, what the fuck is a chicken? And then he went back to the... Yeah. So, I'm just looking through here. I don't know, man. If you're listening to this episode and you don't remember this movie and you remember the poster and you remember that time of your life in which if you are as old as we are, it was probably a better time of your life. It was right before the millennium, 1999. It turns out that parting like it's 1999 is not as good as you remember it may be. This movie was difficult to get through for me. It was. As much as, again, we mentioned Geoffrey Rush and we mentioned... There's so much talent squandered here. And if it was for the greater good, that would have been amazing. You know, one of you earlier talked about William H. Macy, how he's great, always great. You know what I mean? It's like we're given like a sliver, just a taste of what each one of these actors can actually do. But there's not enough, there's either too much thrown at you while you watch it, not enough time to develop it, even for a comedy, and even most of the jokes really fall flat. They really do.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I remember fondly from this, which was probably because of the Smash Mouth video, was the recruitment process. Because I think that's the video, right? And it's also now, you know, we decided, I thought it was a good idea for us to cover this movie now because of Deadpool and Wolverine. And then I remember that obviously there's an entire sequence that it's actually quite fun in Deadpool 2, in which they're doing a recruitment session. Yeah. I don't know if you remember that. And this is basically this movie. It's from this movie for sure. You know, and it is the progenitor of a lot of spoofs and parodies of the genre, if not the first one, man. Because I can't remember anything before this that did this.
Other than Schumacher's Batman films.
Yeah, but that's paying an homage to the camp era, whatever, which I'm not justifying in any way, shape, or form. Although I think that the more time passes, the more those movies are more digestible.
But I will say this: it did feel like it was a parody of the Batman kind of movies.
Yeah, absolutely. Is digestible a word?
Digestible
sure.
is.
Yeah, it is.
It is. Sure. Yeah, why not? Sure. It sounds like it. Yeah.
But
it's fine.
You got the atypical archetype for Superman, but with the one character, the main Jeffrey. Oh my God!
What Jeffrey Rush? What are you talking about?
Yeah, and then you've got the other archetypes which are based off that. So we've got the do-gooders basically trying to do good, but you know, it's I think we should just do a final write-up on this. Would you watch this movie again?
No. Fuck no. Absolutely not. Yeah. But look, I'm sure that there's someone who's listening to this. Oh, Mystery Man, and clicked on this.
Yeah.
Not only we imposed ourselves on them for, 52 minutes now, but on top of that, they may hate us even more. Their hatred for us would go even further when they realize that we roped them into rewatching this movie. But I suggest they do, actually. They do have to listen to this. Because
yeah,
I wish I was listening to this before we decided to watch that movie.
Look,
because then I would have hated myself. More than I already do.
The way I see this movie is that it was between the time of Batman and Robin and X-Men. So X-Men came out the following year. So the new wave of superhero movies had not begun yet. So this that whole thing of like, oh, we're trying to parody the older forms of superhero movies. So back in the time... Yeah, it was a fun movie because it was like, oh, you know, not many people do this and not many people parody this. And then we got shown what a real superhero movie should be. And that was X-Men.
X-Men definitely was a step up in the game.
And it was a huge step up. Yeah. But, you know, it was not harking back to the 60s or 70s style of superhero. It was like, and it's funny because me and you, Umbar, we have such, and I'm sure Steve as well, we have such respect for the Tim Burton Batmans.
Of course, 100%. Yeah.
And again, that was another two superhero movies that completely changed the face of it. But very quickly.
1989.
But very quickly, any superhero movies that came up after the Batman Returns basically started redoing the same schlock over and over again.
Until Blade came along.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
We had Blade and then we had Iron Man. That,
so feel like this movie is part of me says, can we really fault it? Because it was in that like time capsule of nobody really understood what a good superhero movie was. And then all of a sudden, oh, look, this is a good superhero movie sort of thing.
Ooh, I just want to check something.
Check something while we touch on something else. Ricky, I think this movie came out on the tails of something that I really, really like as well. And it does... The paradigm, an entire genre, and that was Galaxy Quest. And Galaxy Quest did what it did really well. But it is the same period. It's got to be the same period. I don't know if we can check quickly what year Galaxy Quest was released.
So, yeah, I'm on it.
All right.
Oh,
I can see that because Galaxy Quest is a great parody of your Star Trek.
Yeah.
And that sort of sci-fi movie. So even your Battlestar Galacticas or even your Andromeda and all of that stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's one camp of nerddom. You know what I mean? Like you've got comic book fans, you've got Trekkies and you've got Star Wars heads. It's
same year.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said about movies from 2000 to 2010. They dated in a particular way. I think it was a conversation that we had recently. And I think there's in any genre, there's a lot of movies from 2000, 2010 that are just dated. And this is one of them. Mm. It's as simple as that. But, you know, I think we talked about this movie long enough. Steve, you're looking for something. What were you looking for?
Yeah, earlier? I was just checking The Punisher with Dolph Lundgren. That was 1989.
So way before, but it's also as much as I loved that movie when I was a kid until it was replaced by the one with Thomas Jane, which is probably the one you should look for.
The one after that. What was the
2004?
One?
2004.
Yeah, more general with Ray Stevenson. But I still prefer
2008.
I know that your British heart is beating for Stevenson and he's gone. Yeah. Bless his soul.
Oh my
That's
God.
Fine. That's fine. But I heard I think I read it recently somewhere, John Bernthal, which plays a great Frank Castle, different type of Frank Castle, closer to some
training
of the comics
with
as
Thomas
well.
Jane.
Yeah. And it sounds like bullshit to me. It sounds like Bernthal's paying his respects because he knows that his next performance as Frank Castle is going to blow Thomas Jane's memory out of whatever he did out of the water.
But
I met him. I remember that photo. I met John Berntal in Covent Garden. He was super nice, man. It was raining, dude. It was raining. It was in the middle of the road. He has a big beard because he was shooting here for like a crossover with Daredevil or something. Mm. And he was with his wife and kids. He stopped, man. I just went, John. He turns around. He looks at me like, oh, fuck this guy. And he immediately kind of like shielded his children. Like, oh my God, am I going to get shot? I'm going to get stabbed in the middle of London on the street. Who's the fuck? Who's this fucking weirdo? And then I started getting closer and he starts tilting his head like, what the hell's this? And he goes, yes. And I go, John Berntal. And he goes, yeah. He goes, oh, huge fan, man. Do you mind if I... Like, of course. I mean, it's raining, dude. It's raining. He's with his wife and two kids. I'm fanning out. And he stopped there. And I was like, why are you here in London? Like, yeah, I'm shooting. All right. A full-on conversation for like 2 minutes with a stranger. You don't stop over anybody in London in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
If you don't know somebody and someone calls your name, you go, thank you. And you just keep walking. Like, but he stopped. So yeah, he's a nice guy. Anyway, anything you guys would like to add as we bring this episode of Mystery Man to its conclusion?
Are we doing a rating or are we just saying nah?
You know what? Actually, we should.
Okay.
Let's be brutal. Ricky, what do you rate this movie and would you recommend it to anybody? And if so, why?
This is paining me because, as I said, I thought I had really great memory. And it's the same with you guys. I thought I had really great memories of this film. But it did the worst thing a film can ever do, which is it bored me this time. So I'm giving it 3 out of 10. And that 3 is mainly for... I can see the set design. I can see the cinematographers try to do their best. I can see that some of the actors were trying to do their best, but it was boring. 3.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve?
I'm going to basically side exactly with Ricky on this. It is a definite 3. It may have some whimsical heartstrings it plays in the background where when we look at how we remember these movies at the time, but on a rewatch with Umba, the best thing about actually watching it with Umba was the alcohol.
Jesus.
So yeah, that kind of sums it up. We had a couple of drinks while watching it and we made fun of it. And we did take in the fact that, yeah, there's some beautiful cinematography in that, but undone by a cast which seems to be, imploding upon itself, trying to get the best jokes out of it. I mean, there are things which, yeah, if it was done now, and if Mystery Men, as per the comic book, and what we have as the movie which was produced then, and is pulled across into a territory where we have popular movies and we have those budgets and we, you know, and somebody took a piss out of them other than Deadpool, then yeah, I think it might be a good movie if it was created now, but you know, we in hindsight, no,
I'm afraid I'm on the same page, and I think this is probably going to be the only time we will ever agree to this extent. I give this a 3. It's a 3. And it's a big 3, like 3.0, like,
yeah, it's not a 3.5.
No,
it's not
dated. 3.2. And to be honest,
3.0.
Yeah, to be honest with you, it shouldn't, because anything that falls under the realm of comic books has some kind of like it has a proclivity to become iconic, to become something that is at least self-referential or nothing. You got nothing here. There's nothing here. The only thing that I had was a memory, and it wasn't even like a huge amount of disappointment. Like, there's no anger. Like, I remember there's nothing worse than rewatching something and it really, because then it's demolishing the notion, the idea that you build for yourself, which is, you know, to some people it's an irreparable damage. It's not even that. It's just, I was just bored. Mm. And I was like, oh, fuck. I didn't feel bad. I didn't glance at, you know, Steve going, you're gonna ask me to fucking hide a body soon because I asked you to come over and watch this movie. Like, I didn't, you know what I mean? Like, do I owe you? Like, I stole 2 hours of your time. It's not even short, man.
It's 2 hours.
It's 2 hours long. That's the thing. And you know what? Now saying it, now I am a little bit angry, man. Okay. Like, 2 hours.
I'm going to say something. One of the producers did go on to, you know, go and do and produce more movies along these veins.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. I heard this expression. Sorry to interrupt you, but pick up what you were saying. This is, I heard this expression recently. I can't remember who it was. I think actually it was an interview with Christopher Lee. And Christopher Lee said that Hollywood has an endless stream of examples of failing upwards. And this is what this movie is. This is quintessentially, it's failing upwards. This movie was released globally and made a ton of money when it was released. Okay, I'm sure it did. And
no, it didn't.
Cover its budget. Didn't.
Well, what do you mean?
Like, it did half its actual budget.
Okay, but they must have recouped money somehow.
No,
not even in the home video market.
No,
really.
No, it did poorly across the world.
Okay, so scratch all of that. It's an assumption. Then it's not failing upwards. It's just failing. It's just failing. Steve, you were saying something before I interrupted you with this.
So, one of the producers has actually done a load of stuff. And I mean, like, Lawrence Gordon.
Miramax, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so he's got everything. I mean, even Waterworld.
Don't you dare. Don't you Die dare Hard, talk down to Predator Waterworld. 2. And if you're listening to this and you don't like Waterworld, you are wrong.
I stick and my remember, nose up to Waterworld and I point it down.
No. Yeah, you need to rewatch Waterworld, my friend. It's Mad Max on water with Dennis Hopper as the bad guy. What else do you want? What else do you want?
A more competent script.
Shut up, mate. You need to rewatch it. Ricky, by the way, is comfortably. It kind of gives credit to us as friends because he's comfortably drinking IPA in front of me and just declared to the entire world that he likes Friends. So at the end of this, he'll probably open another can of IPA, the disgusting swill.
I did not.
And watch.
Entire season of Friends. Got to correct that. Or maybe I'll go into it more next time. But I didn't say I liked Friends. I said I've seen all of Friends. There's a difference.
I take it. Ricky, it was a partner situation.
No, it was my sister. What? My sister's the big Friends freak. So
on that note, are we going to declare to the world what we're doing next week? I think we shouldn't. I think it should be a surprise.
We'll just do it.
Let's make it a surprise.
Yeah.
It could be Mystery Man 2.
You know what? Let's make it a surprise for all of us. And all of us watch 3 different movies and then come to the table and just talk about it.
And that wraps up this episode of Screen Divers. As you know, we produce content for you, for our pleasure and for your pleasure. And if you would like to hear more, please subscribe, smash that bell, click that link. And we'll continue to talk about movies for you. Perhaps more than movies next time. I am one of your hosts, Umba.
I am Ricky, and thank you for listening.
And I'm Steve. Thanks for having us in your ears.
Till next time.
Ciao, ciao.
She was looking kind of dumb with her finger and her thumb in the shape of an L on her forehead. Well, the years start coming and they don't stop coming. Fed to the rules and I hit the ground running. Didn't make sense not to live for fun. Get smart, but your head gets dumb. So much to do, so much to see. So what's wrong with taking the back streets? You'll never know if you don't go. You'll never shine if you don't glow. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid. And they say it gets colder. You're bundled up now, wait till you get older. But the media men beg to differ, judging by the hole in the satellite picture. The ice we skate
is getting pretty thin. The water's getting warm, so you might as well swim. My world's on fire, how about yours? That's the way I like it, and I'll never get bored. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid. Taking the back seat.